Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by Mr.
Ben Errington.
How's it going, dude? Are you alright?
It's going well.
Yes.
It's going fairly well.
Good. What have you been up to this past hour, half hour, 10 minutes? What are you
this
doing
past half hour and 10 minutes?
Yeah,
that's a real specific time frame for you to ask me what I was doing.
I'm curious.
I ate some chicken. That was nice.
Did you?
It was a massive chicken breast. You know, like sometimes you get chicken breast, you're like, this is a monstrosity.
Was it reanimated at all in any way?
It wasn't reanimated, but I reckon if I put my mind to it, I could probably reanimate it. It was a perfect size breast of a chicken to reanimate.
Lovely, lovely.
Ever so juicy. What about you? What have you been eating?
I had beans and cheese on toast, mature cheddar cheese, bit of salt and pepper on top, bit of cumin in the beans to spice it up a bit.
This is Hester Blumenthal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Turmeric stuff.
Yeah, sometimes I like to get the beans a bit spiced up, like a bit of pizzazz to them. I like to get my Frankenstein on in the lab. I mean, the kitchen, and
right.
It's alive. You know,
it's alive.
So spicy, so spicy. Okay, I will just quickly say as well, if you can see, Oscar is with us.
Oh yeah. Oh, what a rainy day in Manchester, eh?
It's actually been super sunny recently. Until today,
it's very rainy in Bristol as well. Ever so miserable.
Yeah,
I quite like it there.
Yeah. Okay, so last time we talked about The Babadook, but tonight we're not talking about one film, but we're talking about two films. We're talking about the Universal classics, 1931's Frankenstein and 1935's Bride of Frankenstein. And hey, Oscar.
Hey,
for those listening, the cat just sort of got in on the action there. I think we're gonna do it a little bit differently today. So the films are actually, so the sequel number 38 is the next on the list. That's Bride of Frankenstein, and then this is on the Empire list, and then 37 is Frankenstein, the first film. But we're just going to talk about them together because it'd be so weird to do the sequel and then the original, which is the order in which I watch the films, which kind of messed me up a bit. But okay, so do you want to tell us a bit about Frankenstein, first of all?
Yeah, no problem. So Frankenstein is a 1931 American horror monster film from Universal Pictures, directed by James Whale and adapted from the play by Peggy Webling, which in turn is adapted from the novel based on...
Yeah.
I almost said ejaculated. Based on the same novel... But it's a novel of the same name by Mary Shelley, about a scientist and his assistant who dig up corpses to build a man animated by electricity. But his assistant accidentally gives the creature an abnormal murderer's brain, accidentally, as you would. The resulting monster is portrayed by Boris Karloff in the film. So that's Frankenstein, 1931. And then it was followed by Are we going to discuss?
Well, yeah. So let me just quickly do the Empire thing.
Okay.
So here's what Empire had to say about Frankenstein. Jack Pierce created several iconic makeups for Universal in the 30s and 40s, but by far the most indelible is a flat-headed, bolt-necked Frankenstein's monster of 1,000 subsequent parodies. It took Boris Karloff, however, to inhabit this makeup as a tangible character, acting his way out from behind a grease paint and mortician's wax to deliver a nuanced portrait of a childlike creature, prone to rage but also capable of great tenderness. You need only compare Karloff's monster to the later versions attempted by Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi to see the extent of Karloff's achievement. The clumsily, lurching art caricature of popular misconception owes everything to those performances and nothing at all to Karloff's tragically bewildered victim. So that's the first one. Yeah, sounds pretty good. What about the Bride of Frankenstein, the sequel?
So Bride of Frankenstein, the sequel, that's not the official title, it's just called Bride of Frankenstein, is a 1935 American science fiction horror film. Bit of a slight different description there.
Wait, what did they describe the first one as?
American horror monster film.
Okay, and then this one is an American science fiction horror film.
Interesting. So the first sequel to Frankenstein, as with the first film, Bride of Frankenstein was directed by James Whale and stars Boris Karloff again as the monster. The sequel features Elsa Lanchester in the dual role of Mary Shelley and the monster's mate at the end of the film. Colin Clive reprises his role from the first film as Henry Frankenstein. So basically the plot is Mary Shelley reveals the main character of her novels survived. Dr. Frankenstein, goaded by an even madder scientist, builds his monster a mate. A best mate. Lonely, isn't he?
Yeah. The Empire write-up for Bride of Frankenstein is actually really similar. It says, James Whale's sequel to his original Frankenstein reunites the director of Boris Karloff's classic monster and with Colin Clive's hapless scientist. This time tasked with creating a mate for the creature. As before, there's immense pathos in the monster's plight, ultimately rejected by his stunning, shock-haired bride. But there's more mischievous wit in the second outing, largely thanks to Ernest Weissiger's cherishably waspish Dr. Pretorius. Yes, he observes dryly at the reveal that the monster can now speak. There have been developments.
Waspish.
Waspish. I thought that was a perfect description for him.
It's good. Yeah. I like it. It's strange. I don't think I've ever heard anyone described as that, but I like
waspish.
It.
Waspish.
Is it ever so waspish you are, mate? Oh, steady on. Leave me alone. Leave it out.
Is it an insult? Or is it I'd kind of say it's a bit of a compliment.
Because... I don't know, because wasps are bastards.
Yeah. We are bastards, yeah.
Bastards.
I don't know. I think to me it means they know what they want and they want to sting some of it. Like,
I know what I want. I want to sting some of it.
Okay, both films are 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Get out of town. I'm joking.
Get back into town, please. Both films have 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb. So they're both regarded as classics. But I mean, Ben, what did you think to the old Frankenstein?
The old Frankenstein.
Because let me just preface this, because you hate any movie that was released before 1971.
69.
Sorry. Possibly. Ben's cliff.
I don't know. Maybe that's my cliff edge usually.
Yeah.
I quite like these films. I think they're pretty good. You could tell when they're so iconic. For films in the 30s, they don't feel quite as old as that.
No.
Do they really? When you think about it, 1930. Bloody hell, that was a long time ago. And these films, they've aged quite considerably, but the story and a lot of the characters on show and a lot of the elements are still pretty solid, you know? I quite liked a lot of the stuff. But then I found a lot of it quite frustrating, quite annoying. There are some characters in it which I thought were completely and utterly pointless. I don't know what it is, why they were in there. Or what they were trying to do. It's almost like a film, some films of this, not this necessarily this era, but it's almost like they feel I can't be a genre film. I have to cater to everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody likes a laugh. Everybody likes a laugh, so we're going to have to include a comedic character.
You've got like carry-on moments, don't you? It's almost like someone's walked in from a carry-on film and they just, so in the Hammer film, it was that guy who put...
Yeah.
you put like a booby trap in the middle of the road or something like that. And I think I know what you mean. In Frankenstein, are you talking about Baron von Frankenstein, the dad?
So Baron von Frankenstein just looks like any old bloke they pulled out of a pub to play this character. Yeah. It was just like, he wasn't acting. He was chewing that scenery big time.
Yeah.
Like, not in a good way. And it was it was ridiculous. It was almost like other actors on screen, when he was talking, their eyes would go dead, as if they were saying, "This person is in a film with me. How on earth?
This can I person, be getting better?" As soon as the camera stops rolling, he's going to grab my ass. And everyone thought that. Everyone, the boys and the girls. He's going to say something rude and he's going to touch my buttocks, that guy.
It was just bizarre. Like, this Baron von Frankenstein dude was I don't know. And then obviously we get someone in a similar vein in Bride of Frankenstein, who's like some sort of scullery maid, or
I've no idea what she is, but she looks.
I don't know what it was. I couldn't tell what it was. Couldn't even tell.
It's weird, though, wasn't it? Like, I didn't mean like. I feel like those films nowadays, it's like horror films. Like, you come see a horror film, and it's just going to be horror. That's what we're focusing on. But back then, it was like, we're only bringing one film out every 2 years, 3 years, whatever. So we've got to sell to everyone. It's got to be like a big family piece, as harsh as some of the scenes in this film were.
Yeah, it's almost like this comic relief. I mean, it's fine to have in a lot of films. If there's a few moments of comic relief, you know, it helps kind of break it up. It helps break up that tension. It helps sort of push the scenes along. But the Bride of Frankenstein, there was a scullery maid woman who was so OTT, so over the top, screeching and screaming and whooping in delight for, do you know what I mean? It was just, do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Do you think it's similar to like how in like modern day films, someone might just make a little dry, witty remark that would be like about, I'm better not tweet it, or like, I don't know, something stupid like that, like that's very relevant to today. Do you feel like that back then was a similar sort of idea? Like, it's just a little bit of humour. It's a witty remark, but the way they used to do that is to have these sort of larger-than-life characters like threaded into the film.
Yeah, possibly, but it was insufferable. Like, when these people are on screen, I find myself just like, oh, for God's sake, get out of it. It reminded me that we all know that person, you know what I mean? They got a good sense of humour, they get a laugh, but as soon as there's like three or four people around, they become the centre of attention.
Hey,
look at this. it reminded me of that, and I was just like, get on with the film, for God's sake.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, I've never seen either of these films before. I think the first thing that struck me... Okay, so I watched Bride of Frankenstein last week, and then I watched Frankenstein this week because I didn't realise they were like one and two in reverse on the list. I didn't see Frankenstein was coming up afterwards, so kind of messed myself up. But when I watched Frankenstein, I've got to say, I thought visually it was pretty cool. Like, I love like the whole... like the painted clouds and stuff and the painted set the pieces. Yeah, it looks amazing. And then there's like loads of scenes you look at and you think, I've seen that image copied in like horror comics and like various illustrations and tattoos and pastiched in various ways. But I think it looked really beautiful. The Frankenstein monster, it's full of pathos. It's a lot more affecting than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be kind of lame, but it really wasn't. Then again, Bride of Frankenstein, I thought it was a little bit lame. But the first one, I thought it was quite... It actually felt like it could have been... not made from body parts, but like he felt like he could have been like a real, like when he first woke up, I was like, oh, that's actually quite, it feels like he has just woke up and it's just like a dead brain. It's kind of effective. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. I think in Frankenstein, I kind of felt like I understood more about the character of Frankenstein, what he was supposed to be, what he represented, rather than in Bride of Frankenstein, where it felt like it was kind of just taking some of the ideas from the original and running with them, that he's just meandering about killing people, in the same sort of way every single time he kills someone, which is in the Lenny from Of Mice and Men way, doesn't quite know his own strength, wants friends, wants to be sort of interact with people, but obviously people are scared shitless of him, so they scream and he's like, shut up.
Yeah, so, you know what? So I've never been a fan, I've never read the Frankenstein novel, but I've never been a fan of Frankenstein as a character. I've seen a lot of remakes. I've seen a lot of, like, I think there's a TV show at one point, and I've seen him show up in various things, but I've, the cartoons and stuff, but I've never thought he was a cool, like, a good character until I saw this. And now, until I saw Frankenstein anyway, now I kind of realize what the whole, the reason, the appeal, like, I can see why people like him. And I think he's got a whole sort of King Kong sort of vibe.
Like, yeah.
Like, he's a tragic beast, like, you feel sorry for him. And, yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah. Yeah, strange, really. Again, going back to the scenario of Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, obviously, he's not called Frankenstein.
Yes,
he's Dr. Frankenstein's monster. But it felt like in these films, they never quite committed to that.
No, because some people call him Frankenstein, the monster.
Yeah. Yeah, and not just that, like when Bride of Frankenstein is created, they say, it's the Bride of Frankenstein. You'd think Dr. Frankenstein would be like, what? Me?
Huh?
What?
Sorry?
Yeah, it's...
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I mean, because obviously that is confusing.
I noticed that, and I even noted it, and then I thought, I don't think they would have done that. I'm not going to say that out loud on the podcast. They wouldn't have said something stupid like that on the actual film. But now you've said it, I'm like, no, they did.
It was
Frankenstein. It's not.
It was just a bit inconsistent when you think about it. It was just a bit like you'd think the film at least would be able to commit one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
But it didn't. So I guess that's why it's so confusing in pop culture when people go, "Oh, it's Frankenstein." No, it's not. It's Frankenstein's monster, because the actual films Frankenstein don't even know.
Nobody knows. Yeah. Okay, so the key players in both of the films, we've got Colin Clive as Henry Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, Boris Karloff as the monster, otherwise known as Frankenstein, and then there's various other characters in both of them. I think Elizabeth, his wife, pops up in both.
Yeah, Fritz, the hunchback dude, who we guess this is early representation of Igor.
Yeah,
I'm assuming. Also, is the same actor in Bride of Frankenstein as well as some sort of like assistant?
Well, he is.
I swear it was the same.
That's interesting.
The guy who played Fritz was the same as there was an assistant in Bride of Frankenstein as well, and I swear it's the same guy. But
that's quite interesting. I do know what you mean. Actually, I was trying to think what his name is because I was reading about him. He's like a character actor. He does lots of. Lots of those sort of characters. So
yeah.
Dwight Fry is the guy's name. And
big bad Dwight Fry. And he was in Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. Yeah.
So he was.
So he's Fritz in Frankenstein and in Bride of Frankenstein he's Carl. He's sort of like a
still on the set. Oh, we're gonna be here.
Yeah. It's almost like, so Fritz is like a hunchback and then he just went, I'm just gonna stand upright for this next character. Oh, you've completely changed.
Acting.
Acting, character acting. You're in character. You've been in character the whole time, haven't you? Yes.
Yeah.
I was. Who's really me? I don't know. Am I hunchback? Who knows? Might be.
No one knows who the real Dwight is. It's actually a Eastern European woman, for all I know. I don't know. Okay, so the story then. Should we go into the first story, Frankenstein?
Yeah.
So it starts with this dude walking on the stage. It's like an opening sequence. He's dressed in a suit. I think he has a pipe. And he's like, he warns people.
Suit.
Yeah. He warns people about how scary this film can be, how disconcerting. So you just be careful, guys. It's almost like, I feel like that idea maybe played into the Crypt Keeper and Tales from the Crypt and those sort of ideas of people who introduce...
Yeah.
These sort of these films and stories. Scary. Mm-hmm. It's the guy who sits you down and sort of says, I'm going to read you a scary story. And the fact that he says it's going to be a scary story makes you think, oh, bloody hell. It's going to be a scary story.
Shit. Oh, what have I got myself in for here? Strapping.
Yeah. So the first one starts with a bit of a Dennis the Menace sort of vibe. Like it's got Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, and Fritz, his hunchback assistant. They're like watching someone get buried and they're like, we need some, they're looking at it like a pie on a window ledge. They're like, oh, we need to get some of that red action.
Some of that fresh corpse.
Yeah. And then they go to get it. They look at the body, and it's not good. I think the neck's broken, so he said the brain is damaged or something like that. I can't really remember. And then we've got Elizabeth, his fiancée. She's worried about what old Frankenstein's been up to. I didn't actually realise that that was his fiancée the first time I watched it. The only time I've watched it. When I watched it, I didn't realise it was his fiancée.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't sort of straight up, was it? But she was sort of...
I was confused because she goes to his dad. So basically Frankenstein's been in this like laboratory in his castle, and then she goes to his dad with her friend, who I thought was her husband, to say, where's your son? And he's like on her side. It's almost like the roles have been reversed a bit. I don't know. It seems a bit strange to me.
Yeah, I think the setup of this was a bit strange. Like, I wasn't sure who that guy was who was with her initially. Clearly, he's trying to get in there, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's trying to get in there because he's like, oh, your husband's mental. Don't worry. I'll sort you out. I'll help you out, you little...
Yeah. So they're really worried about Elizabeth and this guy. They're really worried about Henry Frankenstein. They think he's losing his mind to some sort of work. They go to Baron von Frankenstein, who's the guy's dad, and then he says, "I'm sure he's shacking up with some other woman."
This was the first moment where it was like, "This is a Carry On film character, yeah." Baron von Frankenstein. I mean, you know, sounds like quite a respectable guy, Baron von Frankenstein. Maybe some like an intellectual or something. No,
yeah, it's absolute ludicrous, pie eating, wine guzzling.
Where'd my shot? Well, of course not, silly woman. It's like that. It's just like, oh man.
Yeah.
Oh man.
He's proper Uncle Knobhead. Like, he's just a guy you don't want to be. Just me and you then, is it?
Oh yeah. Come here, Elizabeth. Sit on my lap. Oh, that's right. Oh, Baron Frankenstein. Yes.
Ooh, bizarre. Touch your bum. That's okay. So.
You want to reanimate something, do you?
Oh, something's animating right now.
Doesn't need electricity.
It's alive. Okay, so she, they go to someone called Dr. Waldman, who is Henry's old professor. It's a recurring theme that's going to be in Bride of Frankenstein as well. He says, "Oh yeah, so Frankenstein, he's lost his marbles. He's trying to bring stuff back from the dead," and they're like, "Oh, what's the harm in it? It's only animals, isn't it?" And he goes, "No, we're talking about humans here." So the three of them go to the watchtower, go to the laboratory, and they're trying to get in. And the Frankenstein's busy. I think he's pretty much there, isn't he? Near the start of the film, he's got his body. He's got all his setup.
And he's ready to do the final experiment to bring him to life.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, "Well, if you want to come in and see... come in and see." And then they go inside, go upstairs. He sits them down. Doesn't give him any sunglasses, which might have added to the effect. I've got to say, the equipment, the laboratory, I thought it was really cool. Like the Tesla coils, like the winches and the chains, and like all of that whole the sound effects and stuff.
It's weird because you don't really get to. You're not really told when this film is set.
No,
because at some point it looks like it might be like in the 1800s or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they've got all these sort of like electrodes and, you know, bits and bobs that kind of look like they may be from the early 1900s. I don't know. It's weird.
Some doodads, yeah. Thing is, when I was in the 90s, I was massively impressed with Tesla coils and things that you can touch and your hair goes up and stuff. So back in the 30s, like 80 years ago, they must have been like, "This is some high tech shit."
Yeah.
This is CGI. Like, wow. Films have come a long way since last year when they first made them. Like, wow.
Things have come a long way. This has got a sound. This has got sound and everything.
Yeah. One day they'll even have colour.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself. Come on, silliness.
Yeah.
Also, you don't really realise where this film is set. Like, what country?
It just says in a European village. So this is filmed in... they have the European village, and it's like a universal backlot place.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't really ever really say. It'd be interesting. I don't know what it is in the novel.
Where all the actors are just very matter of fact and incredibly well pronounced. Actually, I can't even say that word, so what am I even bothering?
Well pronunciated.
Well, they're bloody well pronunciate. Everyone rolls their R's, and you know, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to listen to.
Yeah. So this is the scene like that's been parodied and like pastiche so many times, where they the lightning comes in and they pull the chain, and the body goes up to the thing, and the lightning, you know, squirts it. squirts on the body.
The lightning tickles the body.
And then it's kind of weird to see this told straight, because I've seen this so many times in like Frankenweenie, like Young Frankenstein, you know, as like comedy versions or like different, like not serious. And then this is like full on, like straight. It was pretty cool. It was it was quite disconcerting.
Well, obviously there was a bit earlier as well where Fritz goes and gets a fresh brain for Dr. Frankenstein from the university or something, where there's just a load of brains knocking about, you know, and they're well labeled. One says brain of a criminal psychopath, and one says brain of a lovely man who worked in the post office. And he picks up the post office man's one, and then he drops it, smash.
Yeah, well, it's like when the guy's doing the lecture to show the brains, it's like an episode of Look Around You. Here we have the normal brain, and here the abnormal brain. Notice the brainular circles or whatever on the thing. Yeah. And he was so Look Around You. And then he goes, I'm just going to leave these here, and I expect them to be here by the time I get back.
I'm just off to the lavatory, and hopefully the brains will still be here. And he even does a mix them around like that.
Which one was it?
Oh, who knows?
He says, like, notice on the abnormal brain from the psychopath or the criminal, he says, like, these extra circular nodules or something. And, like, I was like, I was trying to see. And I couldn't see, like, anything. Like, that was exactly the same. I was like, what?
Did you have your 3D glasses on?
Yeah. Oh, look at those 3D, like, bumps on that.
3D. Oh, those 3D nodules coming soon in IMAX.
Oh, look at those skin tags. Oh. I can almost dip my finger in that canyon, brain canyon, whatever it's called, and that spaghetti.
Oh my god! Yeah, due to the incompetence of Fritz, poor old Fritz. Yeah. So he picks up the brain, smashes it, and then he goes, "Oh bloody! I have to have the psychopath one instead."
Whoops.
And then you all you automatically know that something bad's going to happen now.
Yeah. I like the way he just sort of picked up the abnormal one and went like.
Wasn't there like a noise or something that made him drop the normal one? He picked it up, and then someone went like clang somewhere, and he went, and dropped it. Oh, bloody heck.
Yeah. Then he just like sweeps the other one under like the carpet, the other brain.
Oh, bloody dude. Yeah. Oh, what have we done?
So,
so that's
obviously. Yeah, so I was just going to say, Colin Clive, the guy who plays Dr. Frankenstein. But he's quite good. I thought he had very dramatic eyebrows.
He had incredibly dramatic eyebrows. He had quite dark eyes, which made me think, you know, he's been working on this stuff for ages, and
he's been practicing finally made it.
What was that?
He's been practicing them eyes for years for this part. It's a good impression.
It's a bit like that.
Yeah. But he was really good, and he had like a perfectly sort of screechy sort of voice. Like when he did the it's alive sort of line, it sounded.
Ooh. It's alive!
Yeah, it sounded almost like that's what everyone else has been basing it on. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Again, even though he was screaming, it was incredibly well spoken.
Yeah, it was good.
It's alive! That was good, I liked it.
He did say that I've not been, because I always thought Frankenstein was made from dead body parts. He's in this film. He said, "I didn't steal the body parts. I made them." And then it quite clearly shows that he's like stitched some guy's hands on this arm. It doesn't really go into detail. It doesn't really make any sense.
He sounds like one of those guys who's like, "Yeah, I made one of these, didn't I? I made one of it." And he's stolen things from everybody else and just stuck them together. So he sounds like a right twat, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the first time the whole it's alive, and he says, "I am a god. I know what it now means to be god," or something. And then the hand moves, and I thought that bit was quite cool. It's quite it's full of life. That lightning squirted him up with life, isn't it? And
And then Frankenstein sits up like he's just had a, like he's had it every night out, and he's only had 45 minutes sleep.
Yeah,
you know, so he's ruined. He needs to get himself a drink. He needs to get himself a bacon sandwich.
Yeah. Well, did he? You know the bolts in his neck. Is that from this film?
I think so. I think a lot of the design of this character came from this, because I think in one of the early iterations of it, it was very different. Mm. It just kind of looked like a man with a sack on his head. I don't know. I think in Mary Shelley, you don't get much of the monster in the book, I swear, but maybe I'm mistaken. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
So I believe a lot of the way the sort of iconic look of Frankenstein, which is the flat head, the bolts in the neck, green. Well, obviously it's black and white, but pale sort of complexion.
I never understood why he had a flat head.
It's a bit weird, isn't it?
What?
It's so Dr.
What
Frankenstein.
To that head?
Dr. Frankenstein could put his pint on his head. Look, I know I'll create you, mate, but where else am I going to put this beer?
He needs some functionality out of his design, I guess. So he just made a table for your head, a little coffee table. It's weird, isn't it? It's not even normally flat. It's not like a normal head that's like a little bit flat. It's completely right-angled.
It's like he's cut the top of the skull off, put the brain in, and he's gone, oh, bloody hell, what am I going to do now? And he's gone, just put this box there. and paint some hair on it.
Yeah. It's like one of those pies you get there in that, tin. Do you know what I mean? That,
Frey Bentos?
Yeah. Frey Bentos, a big one on his head. And he just put, the hair over the top. Fritz style, as if nobody will notice.
Nobody will notice this.
This flat and stupidly looking flat head.
can you do your best impression of Frankenstein's monster, please? What did he say?
Well, he didn't say anything, did he, in this one? So I think it was No, I think his eyes were a bit more. He looked. Yeah. He reminded me of you get a rescue dog, and more so later in the film when he starts acting out, but he's quite a nice pleasant thing, but then all of a sudden you don't realize he's scared of fire, or someone puts a light on, and then he just flips out and starts attacking and killing stuff. It's just put him down.
Yeah, just put him down, for God's sake. Yeah, because he's obviously quite a broken
individual.
he's just broken. Yeah. Yeah, I think what's the point in having this guy around? Because, do you know what I mean? They've created him. Yeah, you've created life. Fine. You're playing God. Fine. Great.
Are you saying what is good the point of you. Life? That's what.
No, no. But what is the point of keeping him around? Because he is
tablehead, isn't it?
But what's the point? He's bad tempered. He's unpredictable. He's psychopathic. He's killing people, and he's just. And you know what I mean? You can't have a chat with him. I know he chats a bit in Bride of Frankenstein, but you can't have a chat. You can't sit down and have a chat with him, because you'd be like, oh, I'm having a lovely chat with him. And then suddenly you just go, hey! And he just can put red on. What's the point?
Yeah, I only asked if he wanted tea. I know what you mean. He's the kind of stupid that would annoy me. I'd be talking to him and say, so I've just read this book and I really like this scene. What do you think about it? He wouldn't say anything interesting. He wouldn't be adding anything to the conversation. And I'd be like, oh, fuck. And you live in this house, do you?
I'll tell you what you need, a bride to sort you out now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what happens next? So
there's a lot of stuff in the castle with Frankenstein.
Is his wife and is his fiance saying they're all sold? They're like, oh yeah, this is actually pretty good. He has got a very good table for her. This is nice work. A nice craftsmanship. Yeah,
they're going, you've done a business here, mate. You've made a decent bloke. We're going to go back to the castle and just chill out for a bit.
Yeah. So I think the next scene is when he shows him the light from the ceiling and he flips out. And then they go, oh no, he's actually quite dangerous.
So they chain him up in the dungeon, then, didn't they?
Yeah, and then Fritz takes his flaming torch and he's just poking it at him.
Yeah, so Fritz is now acting like a kid with a magnifying glass would a nest of ants.
Yeah, I got the impression he was jealous of Frankenstein's new freak.
Like, yeah, He's like, I'm the best freak. And Frankenstein was like, well, maybe I'm the best freak.
But
and
then he was like, is, like, Frankenstein had like a pint, and he was like on Fritz's back, and he went, put it on Frankenstein's head.
This pint doesn't quite rest on your hunchback. I'm going to have to make a new freak in order so this pint to be rested. Can you just use a normal coffee table like everybody else? No, it's not. You can't move around with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Imbeciles.
I keep wanting to say Igor, but it's Fritz. It's not Igor.
Yeah, so I don't know when Fritz became Igor, whether it was created for another film or whether there was a guy called Igor in the book. Who knows? But he was called Fritz in this, and obviously he's been antagonizing Frankenstein, and then Frankenstein ends up losing his nut, losing his bonts.
Which one?
One of them. Yeah. And strangling Fritz. See, this bit I was confused by, because I was like, what's happened? Because it was quite under...
Yeah, what do you mean?
It was just Fritz's body was hanging in the background. You could see him hanging like a silhouette of him, and you obviously knew that Frankenstein had strung him up.
Yeah.
And Dr. Frankenstein and his other dude are obviously shocked by it, and I find this whole bit where they were in the castle and people were coming and going and Frankenstein was kicking off all a bit aimless.
Yeah, I think you're basically just getting the point across that he's a wild card. He doesn't play by no doctor's rules, and like he's violent. And the outcome was that he killed Fritz, who maybe deservedly so. And then they decide to put him down. And Dr. Waldman is like, "You Frankenstein, you're about to get married. You go chill out. I'll sort this mess out. I'll destroy him." And then that's it. So Dr. Frankenstein leaves, and like the next scene, he's like all happy. I'm getting married. Like he has no, like his conscience is completely clear. But then Dr. Waldman stays to kill Frankenstein, and then Frankenstein wakes up and strangles him to death.
Yeah, he's about to give him the little lethal injection, and he's just about to stick it. Yeah. He's just about to stick it in, and he goes, "Oh no, I won't have a nut." Strangles him. Frankenstein death count, kill count, sorry, 2 so far, and he hadn't even got out of his house.
Strangling's his thing as well, isn't it? Oh,
yeah,
seems to be.
He's really into it. he's really into it. Strangling.
He's got giant hands as well.
Yeah, he's got pretty big hands. You'd think like he'd do like a diving headbutt or something, Frankenstein.
Yeah, that seems almost like perfect. Like, why doesn't he?
Yeah, like, do you remember, what's his name from Spider-Man comics?
Hammerhead.
Hammerhead, yeah. He had a pretty flat head. Didn't he have just like a bit of metal in his head or something?
Yeah, I think so.
He used to headbutt people left, right and centre.
I don't understand how that would be like a good, like, power, like a villain.
Yeah.
A bit of metal in my head. Because that wouldn't like absorb the impact. It's probably hurt you more because it's like underneath your skin, like, you've got no layer of defense between you and the metal.
Your brain's just getting absolutely liquidized when you get around headbutting people.
Yeah.
Because he was like a gangster, wasn't he? So he's like,
my name's Thamafed. Oh, what? It's like, you really need to see someone, mate.
Hammerhead, you all right?
Oh. It's like, it's Frankenstein now. Yeah. we need to put him down. Put Hammerhead down. Okay, yeah, so
old Frankie.
Yeah.
Frankie goes to Hollywood.
Yeah.
He wanders down now out of the castle and into civilization.
Into the woods of the European town. Yeah.
Yeah. So the European town, they're having a little party, they're having a get together, they're having some they're dancing about. I'm assuming this is for Dr. Frankenstein's wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and then sees a little girl.
Yeah, do you know what? Even though from the start of the scene, I knew what was going to happen. This was quite effective, I think. Don't you think it was quite effective?
Yeah. So this is the scene. This scene was cut because this film came out. I think I read before they coded films, like they gave films ratings, and then they had to cut this scene or the second half of it when the ratings came in because it's kind of like gruesome in a way, like. He just sort of lobs her in the water.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously the little girl's like, "Oh, will you come play with me?" And he's like, yeah, of course I will. And then they do a thing where they're throwing the heads of flowers into the water and they're floating.
Yeah.
And obviously Frankenstein, being the bloody maverick that he is, goes, "If these flowers are floating, I want to see if this little girl floats."
Yeah.
Which is normal. And he lobs her in.
And like, it doesn't even look like it's like a little pond. She just goes straight down. Like it's almost like there's like a little vortex or something beneath that pond. Like he had no idea.
Yeah.
Like, that pool was that deep.
No.
It's her own
Frankenstein's monster is an innocent party in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was just.
Then he runs away after he does it like he's been told off by his parents or something. Like he runs away crying.
Frankenstein's monster, get yourself to your room. So
he runs away. So it is quite affected, that scene, because she just dies. Like it's kind of sudden, and she's just like a very normal little girl, and she dies, and then what happens next?
I think there's preparations for the wedding are completed, and the wedding's pretty much about to happen when Waldman arrives to sort of say that the doctor who was going to kill him with the old has been found strangled, and then obviously.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Dr. Frankenstein suspects the monster. Well, there else it would be, but
yeah.
And then he hears a scream somewhere. There's an odd bit where they're running around the house trying to find they obviously think the Frankenstein's monster is in the house, and they run up down some stairs, up some stairs, down some stairs again, Scooby-Doo style, trying to find you know what I mean? The scream was only coming from one place, and they're like, it was downstairs in the cellar. Downstairs, it was upstairs in the...
Yeah, and then Frankenstein just walks into the room. Like, yeah. Frankenstein's monster walks into the room.
Yeah. It's like a big house. There are a lot of people there.
He's giant. He's not like stuff. He's not good at hiding.
He's not subtle because he walks forever like. Yeah.
he does do that. Yeah, true.
he's an absolute pain in the ass, isn't he?
He's not good at hide and seek.
Also, what's his problem? Like, he's just killed a kid. Go and have some time to reflect somewhere. Go and have some quiet moment. Don't go storming into the house trying to kill someone else.
But we don't know if he's trying to kill someone. Is this weird, actually? Because so he doesn't do anything to Elizabeth. I think he just scares her, something rotten, and then he runs away. And then they're like, okay, we've got to find him now. Like, this is the end of the line. At the same time, there's a big party happening in the town. The father of the drowned girl walks through the party with the daughter and the dead daughter in his hands. It's quite an effective scene, I think. And he walks forward, and then he goes, "Frankenstein's monster did it." And I was like, "How the hell does he know that?" Like, he's made some assumptions there. Like, first of all, how does he even know about the monster? And if he does know about the monster, like, why would they be celebrating Frankenstein's wedding if he's going out making monsters?
And how does he know about the monster? How does he know the monster was created by Frankenstein? How does he know the monster killed his daughter? How did he find his daughter if she just drowned? Or I guess she was floating in the river.
So she did float.
She did float, yeah. Someone should tell Frankenstein's monster that.
Yeah.
He'd be able to move.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Float down here.
So this guy, like, he's made so many assumptions. Like, I think he's made some stuff. Like, they say, what happened to your daughter? Did you do it? No. It was Frankenstein's monster, wasn't it? What? Frankenstein's got a monster. And then like it turned out to be true and he went, told you. It's Frankenstein's bloody monster.
I bloody told you. Yeah, it was all a bit mad. That was the kind of part where plot kind of just filled in the blanks for you, didn't it? It just went, look, this is what's happened. Don't question me about it, all right?
Yeah.
And then obviously everyone goes after Frankenstein's monster, like the classic
big hunting party.
Big hunting party with fire and like forks and, you know, not little forks, but you know, garden forks. And they all go after Frankenstein's monster, who ends up. There's a bit of like a windmill now, isn't there?
Yeah. So they chase him at the windmill, take him right at the windmill. Well, Dr. Frankenstein takes him at the windmill, and then they're fighting in the.
He does what?
They're fighting in there, and he knocks Frankenstein out. And there's one bit where all the villagers they're burning the bottom of the windmill, so it's on fire. They're all screaming, lots of dogs barking and stuff. And the monster chucks Dr. Frankenstein's body out of the window. And it lands on... It says, so look at the Wikipedia entry. It says, they find the monster has climbed to the top, dragging Frankenstein with him. The monster hurls the scientist to the ground. His fall is broken by the veins of the windmill, saving his life. It didn't look like it saved his life when I saw it. Like his back literally like bends completely around the weather vane.
Luckily, his fall was broken by concrete.
I was watching it, I was like, fuck me, I didn't realise he died. Like, it looked like he was just gone.
If you watched that happen, you wouldn't go, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God he's all right. You'd think
exactly, dead. Yeah.
Every bone in his body.
Oh, he was lucky to have landed on that, wasn't he? Land on that blade that, like, Seth snapped his back right into. It looked really bad. It looked like the worst when you watch like epic fail videos on YouTube.
Someone's watched Bride of Frankenstein and gone back and filled that bit in.
Yeah.
Because if you're writing that about the film, you go, slung him onto the floor, obviously killing him.
He's apparently he doesn't die, but it looks like he should. And then they burn. Yeah, he burns and that's the end. But no, it's not the end because it has this really weird end scene with Baron von Frankenstein, the dad. Like, Frankenstein is in hospital, bed, or like, he's in his bed, he's getting better. And there's about 10 sort of scantily clad women service people. They bring up like some really old wine that used to belong to Baron von Frankenstein's wife, I think. And they're like, this is for Frankenstein so he gets better. And then Baron von Frankenstein just closes the door on the son, takes the wine. And then it looks like he's just about to like have it off with these like 10, this harem of women.
I think whoever this guy was playing Baron von Frankenstein was like, the film had finished.
Even the character, even his name sounds stupid.
And he went, no, I've got a great idea for the end sequence should be this. And somehow he convinced everyone that it was a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Idiot. When did this happen as well? Because Bride of Frankenstein seems to start.
I know, yeah.
Immediately at the end of Frankenstein, like there's even some overlap. So when did this scene with Baron von Frankenstein, who doesn't exist in Bride of Frankenstein, does he?
I don't think so.
No, he's gone.
He died after a night of sex with 10 women. Like, yeah. It's too much for him. Wine was corked pretty badly, as it turned out.
Oh, my old wine was corked and, you know, something else was corked. And
yeah.
Well, at least he went out doing what he loved.
Fucking.
You'd assume.
Okay.
So Bride of Frankenstein starts pretty much as the windmill is still on fire, and do you know what I mean? It's just
weird.
How often do you get that in sequels? It's weird.
I quite like how it worked. The weird thing for me was because I watched this one before I watched the first film. So this was weird. So it opens with the windmill burning, and all the villagers leave. And then there's a guy who wants to prove that Frankenstein is dead, the monster is dead, so he climbs in. I didn't realise at the time that this was the father of the daughter, the girl.
Yeah, it was the father of Maria, because he said something like, he killed my daughter, I wanna go and make sure he's dead. And his wife, even his wife is like OTT.
Yeah, yeah.
His wife was like, don't bloody do it, man, don't do it. she screamed at the top of her lungs when he like fell down the aisle. Oh my god.
Yeah. But like I just thought he was a randomist. I thought it was victim number one and victim number two. Yeah. I miss a whole lot of emotional weight. If you might have had a bit more emotional weight, I don't know. Because I was like, these characters just dying. But you know, they had the daughter who got killed by him. But we've actually missed a bit as well. So the way it actually starts, which is kind of cool, it's Mary Shelley, I think her brother, and Lord Byron. They're like in a... So in the way the first film opened with that guy saying this is going to be a scary film, this one opens with them telling stories, and Lord Byron is playing like this like ludicrous rolling ard guy. And then she's like, oh, well, you know, Frankenstein didn't actually die. He actually lived on, and then the story begins there. But I thought it was quite a nice little intro.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I thought it was.
Okay, so I'll be honest, the Bride of Frankenstein film, which we've now moved into, I don't really remember that much from it. I don't know if I just like watching the first one kind of erased the second one a little bit for me. I don't know.
I think that like, as far as I can tell from a lot of what I read about these films, a lot of people seem to think that Bride of Frankenstein or The Bride of Frankenstein is much better than Frankenstein in pretty much every way. But I don't think I agree. I think a lot of the weight of, even though they sort of push the character of Frankenstein's monster a lot more, I kind of still feel like he's doing a lot of the same stuff. I don't think I mean, I know he manages to talk and sort of almost make a friend of sorts, but I feel like he's still this over the top guy who's just, well, not guy, but monster, flat-headed monster. He was just overreacting about everything. Yeah. I mean, just overreacting.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. So this is further up on the Empire list that we're doing. I did think Frankenstein was better than Bride of Frankenstein. I think that the tone was a little bit more complete. It felt a bit more gothic and true. Whereas this one, especially later on with like the little people in the jars, like the tone just seemed to shift kind of weirdly away from what the first one did. But some people seem to love this one, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. As I said before, the character, this scullery maid who seems to appear, well, her name's Minnie apparently, but she seems to appear and like she's at the start when they sort of realize that Dr. Frankenstein's alive and that the monster's, and they assume the monster's dead. She kind of like flits in and out. She ends up in sort of like the house where the sort of family live as well. Where she's just not needed. She's just screeching and screaming and doing a load of mental crazy stuff. I don't understand what the point of her is.
Yeah. She's kind of pointless. I wasn't watching the first one thinking this needs an idiot, like another idiot.
But yeah, imagine this film had Baron von Frankenstein in it as well. Imagine
he's not,
that.
He's not in this one at all, though. No, I don't remember.
He's not. He's not in this one. And imagine a scene with Baron von Frankenstein and this mini character. Imagine those two interacting. Just imagine that for a second. That's horrible.
I don't want to imagine them interacting because they would likely be getting it on with Baron von Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. If he had his way, and she'd be screeching at the top of her lungs just at the sight of Mini Baron.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Okay. So obviously they take Baron von Franken. Sorry, they take Dr. Frankenstein's body back to his castle home, where they then realise that he ain't dead at all. He was just KO'd. He was briefly KO'd.
Wait, I'm confused. So I think this is because I watched it the wrong way around. So he did actually die in the first one?
No, he didn't. He was still alive, wasn't he? Dr. Frankenstein was still alive.
Yeah.
They thought he was dead, but they took his body back to the castle home in order to sort of, announce that he died. And then when the mortician or the doctor was examining him, suddenly he was alive. His hand moved. And then Minnie, the scullery maid, screamed again for like the fifth time.
Hmm.
He's alive. Do you know what I mean? So it was a nice little flip there to show that he was alive rather than thing.
Is that because I was under the impression that he was actually supposed to have lived in the end of the first one, which I know he did. But do you think they added this whole thing here because a lot of people watched that fall from the windmill think well, he's definitely dead. Like, there's no question about it. And then he went,
there was nothing. There was nothing to show that he wasn't dead at that point. So it's almost like then they went, oh, actually, if we're going to do another film, we should probably bring back the main character. I'm going to do that. Just say he didn't die when it was obvious he did. Oh, right. Are people going to fall for that? Yeah.
Yeah, of course they are, yeah.
So, yeah, obviously, Dr. Frankenstein pretty much is coming back to his normal life, and his wife's obviously a little bit upset about everything that's happened. And then Henry Frankenstein's former mentor, just one of his...
The waspish man. Dr. Pretorius, yeah.
Just arrives at his house. Bear in mind, he hasn't given him bloody any time to recover from this whole thing. But obviously, he is a guy who knows of Dr. Frankenstein's experiments, wants to, like, team up with him, elaborate on the experiments, and create something new. And that's when he takes Dr. Frankenstein to his lair. It's got to be a lair, isn't it? It's not anything else.
Is this with the little people?
Yeah, and he says, look, here's all my previous experiments that I've done.
Yeah.
And basically, there's tiny, tiny versions of human beings. Like, what does this mean?
Yeah, so this is kind of, so Frankenstein's monster, even, is like, you get the idea that he's a dead man's brain in a sort of weird dead body that's some sort of not quite real life. Like, it's not really human. But then, like, Dr. Pretorius is little people. He has, like, 6 or 7 little people in these little jars. And they're just like one's a businessman, one's a ballet dancer. And they're, like, acting as if they are those.
King and a queen. It reminded me of that Black Mirror episode, I think it was the Christmas one, where there was, like, a little AI sprite type thing.
Which
was supposed to be sort of like in a little white room.
Yeah.
And it was basically like a clone, basically a tiny little clone of somebody.
Yeah.
And obviously it was almost like that. And it was a bit sinister, really, but I didn't quite, okay, it was sinister, but I didn't understand it in this film. I was a bit like, well, so he's created these tiny little people. So what does he need Dr. Frankenstein for? Because he can clearly create life.
Yeah.
A tiny little look, do you know what I mean? Just do that, but on a bigger scale. Why do you need Dr. Frankenstein to get a load of bits together?
To make a bride for...
To make a bride for Frankenstein. You sicko.
Yeah.
And also, when these people are just in these jars, like, do they need to go to the toilet? Do they need to eat and drink to stay alive? Or are they has he somehow harnessed life and he's maintaining these tiny little jars? An infinite life. Like, what is it? I needed more from that. It was like, oh, little people. He's done some little people. No, I needed more. It was too vague. Didn't understand what the hell they were on about.
Why he needed Dr. Frankenstein if he could make perfect life pretty much in these little
people. And he made a king and he made a queen, and the king loved the queen. It was like, and then he was like, oh, and there's a ballet dancer, but she only dances to this one song, Bruno Mars, which is annoying, you know, because I've got to keep playing that song for
the rest
square.
Of the film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so he tries to, you're going to have to take the brunt of this one, Ben. So what happens? So he convinces Dr. Frankenstein to help him or to work with him?
Yeah, so he basically... says he wants to create a mate for the monster, and then offers a toast to their venture to a new world of gods and monsters. So he is kind of like, he's kind of forcing Henry to help him at this point, but I don't really know what's in it for Henry at this point.
Yeah, isn't he just like pandering to his like need to create life being an impressive doctor man?
Almost like that. So Dr. Septimus Pretorius is this guy, is the waspy man.
Yeah.
So he says he's going to grow an artificial brain while Henry gathers the parts for the mate. And then we sort of go back to what Frankenstein's been up to. Previously on Frankenstein's Monster, what's he been up to? And he's just been milling about.
Doing a bit more of what he did in the first one. So like he's out there and then I think he gets strung up by some villagers, right?
Yeah, well, because just before he sees like a woman up on a little cliff edge or up on a little few rocks, and she's like just having a, I don't know, she's just chilling out or whatever, and then he sees her and goes, and obviously what you do is when you see something terrifying is if you're on a ledge, just fall off that ledge. So she falls off the ledge into the water, and then obviously Frankenstein kind of saves her, but I guess he's more of a hindrance, isn't he? because he just gets in and gets limbs everywhere and pulls her out. And then she keeps screaming and screaming and screaming. And that's when obviously the other villagers sort of hear the screams. They've obviously been searching for Frankenstein's monster since. Oh,
okay, yeah. So they're still on the task. They're still on the job.
No one's gone home, you know what I mean? Some people have been out there doing 18-hour shifts.
Wow, so this is like literally within hours of the first film.
Yeah, exactly.
And it only takes the same amount of time for Dr. Henry Frankenstein's back to like reattach to its like lower heart, to his pelvis.
Yeah.
Amazing. Incredible. The wonders of science.
So, I mean, they do sort of like string him up, don't they, at this point?
Yeah. So they lock him up in like a little prison thing.
And he
breaks out within seconds.
Yeah, there was a little bit of Christian imagery here, wasn't there, where they sort of strung him up on a pole, and at one point he was sort of up like that. It was, which I thought was a bit strange. There was a few bits of Christian imagery. There was a Jesus on the cross at one point, which Frankenstein had a little bit of a look at, and he went.
So when does he start talking? So
so he sort of attacks a sort of gypsy family, didn't he? Who were sort of just chilling out.
And, why does he do that?
He goes because he wants to eat their food. They're like cooking a lovely raccoon or something.
What's wrong with this guy?
And he walks over and he's just like, oh, I love a bit of that meat. And he's trying to eat the meat and it's burning his hand and he's scared of the fire. For God's sake, just calm down. That's when he hears a little violin playing. He hears a little violin playing from a little blind man.
Yeah, so this guy's, I remember this guy. So he's quite a nice, he's the kind of person that if you were a monster, you'd like to find and enjoy a meal with. Because he's kind of like an earthy sort of dude. He's cooking some food. He just wants a friend.
He's cooking some food. He's smoking the Mary Jane.
Yeah.
He's just chilling out, man.
He just wants a guy to smoke some J with him, apparently.
Yeah. He's just like, look, I'm not going to judge you. No matter what you've got, not have you done, no matter what you've been through, I'm here for you, mate. And Frankenstein goes, so let's chill out. Although when Frankenstein comes in, he kind of like, it's a bit weird because he kind of like says, I'll get you some food, and then goes, now go to sleep.
Yeah.
I've only just got here, mate.
It's bedtime. I don't know who you are, really. I've known you for 2 minutes.
Even if I was Frankenstein, I'd be like, I don't trust this guy.
Yeah.
There was a bit at this point.
Now it's toilet time.
I don't need to go. There was a bit at this point. This was obviously my damaged brain that thought this. But there was a part where Frankenstein was kind of sleeping or going to sleep, and then the old blind man kind of like rested his head somewhere. And then there was a weird shot where it panned backwards, and it looked like a little blind man was
smoking his pipe. Now it's your turn. Smoking's good. Yeah.
Smoking's good. Careful when you pull the skin back. It was a bit odd. Anyway, so then we get a little bit... Well, we don't know how long Frankenstein's monster stays with this guy, but we kind of... The next day, they're kind of... I'm assuming it's the next day. The blind man's kind of showing him different things. Like, this is bread. You like bread? And he's like, yeah, I like bread. He picks it up, listens to it.
So when did he start talking? Like, is he just like slowly starting to talk over this whole process?
Yeah. So now, with the time he's spending with the little blind dude, who's telling him what different things are. Here, smoke, good, smoke, good, and that's when he starts speaking. That's when he says,
heroin, good.
Heroin, good. I like it when he's smoking. He knows what he's doing as well. Like that's Frankenstein. Yeah. That dead psychopath's brain is definitely
abnormal brain inside of him. Yeah, Fritz did good with that one.
Yeah. So, obviously that's fine for a while, but then two other guys turn up, two interfering guys turn up. They're like, hey, we've been lost out in the woods for ages. We want a place to stay. And the blind man, being the absolute kind soul he is, says, come on in, everyone, smoke on this pipe. Smoke on this pipe. It's bedtime now. Now it's toilet time. And then obviously the two guys come in and they go, hang on a minute. You're chilling out with a monster.
Yeah.
Oh, you're chilling out with a bloody monster. And then obviously Frankenstein does his thing. Frankenstein's monster, sorry, does his thing and loses his shit and burns down the house with the little blind man.
The blind man dies?
I'm not sure if the blind man dies, but the blind man says something like, why would you do this? I thought we were friends or something.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? I feel like that's the whole theme of Frankenstein, is that you should never smoke another man's pipe. But
Never smoke another man's pipe, because yeah, that's it. That's pretty much it. Yeah. Well, you can do if you want, mate. You've got to make your own decisions in life, you know? It's fine.
Okay, so when does Pretorius come back into it?
Pretty much now, I think. Somehow, Frankenstein's monster ends up with Pretorius again. I think he just managed to stumble upon where they are. I think he's having a lovely bit of dinner. Have you noticed when Pretorius actually says one thing? He, early on in the film, he offers Dr. Frankenstein a little bit of gin, and he goes, "It's my only weakness." And then later on, he offers the Frankenstein's monster a smoke, and he says, "It's my only weakness."
Ooh, very waspish thing to say.
Very much like the Joker in The Dark Knight, who can't commit to how he got his scars. He's a little bit of a lion, so-and-so.
Has he got his cohorts to look for body parts yet?
His cohort's looking for body parts, getting body parts, I believe.
And so I remember I made a note here. This is one of my notes from when I watched it. I think I had a beer or something, I can't remember much, but I did make a very good note here. It's a quote from Dr. Pretorius. He said, "I hope her bones are firm." Like,
yeah.
I just remember hearing that and be like, oh, I need to note that down.
Yeah.
For further use. But he's a very creepy guy, Pretorius.
Yeah, very, very, very creepy. And I think at this point, Dr. Frankenstein refuses to help anymore, because I think they've got enough body parts or something, and I think he just realizes the whole game of it is a little bit mad. But then Pretorius kidnaps Dr. Frankenstein's missus and says, "Look, she's going to be all right, but you've got to help me finish this little pet project of mine.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she's not going to be all right." So then they do the final preparations for the Bride of Frankenstein. Bride of Frankenstein, obviously, who was played by the same actress who played Mary Shelley earlier in the film, which I thought was a pretty cool little thing, don't you think?
And obviously, budget constraints, isn't it?
Yeah. And obviously Frankenstein's monster gets to sort of witness the birth. Why? Not the birth, but
why the hell did they call it Bride of Frankenstein? Like,
I don't know. There was pretty much nothing about the Bride of Frankenstein. Bride of Frankenstein was the last 4 minutes of this film.
Yeah, well, I was thinking it's the Frankenstein's monster that's getting the bride. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not making a wife for himself. He already has one.
Yeah, Bride of Frankenstein. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, really. No. They meant Bride of Frankenstein's monster.
Then again, like you said, the reason that there's all these confusion nowadays is because of these silly film titles, and they don't even know.
What would have been a better title for this film?
I don't know.
Frankenstein 2, Frankenharder. I don't know.
Yeah, Frankenharder. Would have Frank. Yeah, Frank.
Frankenstein 2, no little girls die in this one. Don't worry.
I would have just called it Franken. I don't know what I would have called it, but I'll figure that up towards the end. Okay,
Frankenstein smokes a pipe.
I would have called it Frankenstein too. Like, and I think that's quite a good naming convention for things.
Yeah.
The second one.
The second coming.
Yeah, episode 2. Volume 2. I would have called it Frankenstein Volume 2. Okay, so go to the end. So Frankenstein, the monster, is now trying to force Frankenstein to make him a wife, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
And then we get the same sort of scene as from the first one. It's alive. I think it's all the same machinery. Pretty much exactly the same, but the woman looks a lot better than he does. She hasn't got the square head.
No. She hasn't got the square head.
Like the lightning stripes down the side of the hair, which...
Her hair's like a big traffic cone on her head.
Yeah. Has she got the bolts on her neck? I can't remember.
No, I can't remember if she got the bolts. Maybe just screws.
Hey, look, in the Wikipedia entry, it says, "She's alive, alive," Henry cries. They remove her bandages and help her to stand. The Bride of Frankenstein, Dr. Pretorius declares. Again, Dr. Frankenstein is in the room. Like, surely he goes... Will you please stop calling that guy Frankenstein?
I've got a wife. I do not need another wife made out of body parts.
You stole my wife for this exact thing to happen.
Bride of Frankenstein. No, that's not right.
Bride of Frankenstein. Like, just like talking over him.
Why didn't they just give Frankenstein's monster a name?
I know. Would it, like, Dave or, like, maybe not Dave. Maybe something like...
Keith.
Frankenstein is a good name, though. That's the thing. Frankenstein is a good, catchy name.
Franklin.
I think they should have just called the other guy Henry throughout the film.
Yeah.
Dr. Henry.
Oh, it was just confusing. You know what I mean? Baron von Frankenstein, Frankenstein, Henry Frankenstein, Frankenstein's monster, Bride of Frankenstein. For God's sake.
Elizabeth. Yeah. Okay, so at the end, so she rejects, she wakes up. She's a much more perfect looking specimen. And she rejects Frankenstein because he's got a really flat head. I think that's what happens anyway. And then he starts seeing us, like he says, she hates me. And then I really can't remember. So
he just kicks off, doesn't he? I mean, he just kicks off. And then there's a laboratory, there's a lever. A lever that if you pull, destroys the whole laboratory. Because why would you not keep one of those levers around when there's a shambling, idiot man? Monster walking around. You giant just have hands. A lever, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
With giant hands. You just go, this lever, well, I've put this lever on the machine to destroy the whole laboratory in one big explosion. But don't have that. Don't have that. That's one bit you don't need.
No. Or put a sign up. Don't pull this lever.
Don't pull this bloody lever.
And then they escape. I think Frankenstein does. I don't know about Pretorius.
No, he doesn't. So Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein and Elizabeth escape. Because Frankenstein's monster lets him. He sort of says, you go, but we belong dead. Talking about him. Talking about Bride of Frankenstein and talking about old Waspy Wasperson.
Yeah. That's quite a nice ending to it. Have you noticed, so they get out and then they look at the thing on fire or crumbling or whatever it is, and then it just says the end. Have you noticed a lot of these older films, they don't have any, like, denouement. Like, they just finish, like, they just finished like the cat people, that kind of just like it just ended, and then it didn't have that sort of final few chapters, final couple of scenes that were like
time for reflection, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, it's just the end, but
the end, and you'll bloody well deal with it.
Yeah,
any questions you've got, forget it.
Okay, so this has been a bit of a longer one. How are you feeling? How's the coffee working?
I haven't got any coffee. I've just got a lovely bit of water in my little Star Wars cup.
Oh, man, I could have done something with water. I had some coffee. It went. But, okay, so...
It went.
So, directing style. Any jump scares? Any shitty fans moments? I think the music was really good. I love the title cards on the intro and outro. I love the openings when it doesn't start with the film itself. It starts like with a little preamble, which is quite nice. I love the photography, the black and white photography in the first one anyway. I definitely need to watch Bride of Frankenstein again, not just yet but at some point, just because I feel like my mind is just completely frazzled on that one. Maybe it's a bit late, I don't know, a bit tired.
I don't know if there are any shit your pants moments. I mean, some bits were sort of quite creepy, some bits were quite effective, like when Frankenstein shut the old little girl in the water.
And then when Frankenstein broke his back, that to me, I did actually like wince a little bit for him.
And then certain characters just screeching at the top of their lungs, they were shit your pants moments, but not the good kind. They were just like, Jesus Christ, turn the volume down on that. My God.
Yeah. I mean, they were good. I think I preferred, well, we'll do it in the grades, but I preferred one over the other quite significantly, actually.
Yeah, I think I'm the same.
Okay, should we do some trivia?
Yes.
Okay, so question the first. This Fritz character was actually based on Igor in the Mary Shelley novel.
Yeah, is that true?
False.
True?
No, there was never an Igor and there was never a Fritz.
See, I was going to say that. You confused me.
Yeah.
There was never an Igor. So when was Igor created?
I don't know. Apparently... Fritz was like the prototype, and then as they sort of through various iterations, he turned into Igor. Wrong, I'm afraid. Okay, in the original novel, Shelley describes a creature as having, so you know, he's like a gruesome sort of thing and dead body thing, and the ones we know him as. But in the original novel, she describes him as having flowing hair, yellow, almost translucent skin, glowing eyes and black lips, and a rocking bod. True or false?
True.
Well, she said some of it. She didn't say he had a rocking bod.
Oh, yeah, see, I knew. I just added that bit. I bet he did have a rocking bod, though.
Yeah, but I think that's the idea. I think he was meant to be a quite a handsome looking dude.
Black lips.
Wow. Black lips.
So yeah, black. So yeah, say a black lip.
Yellow, almost translucent skin.
This is, yeah, long hair. He sounds crazy. He sounds like someone off of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
Rockin' bod, obviously, was the key to that.
Yeah. Okay, so Shelley wrote the story as part of a competition between friends to see who could write the best horror story. Lord Byron was present. Which sort of makes things sort of unfair, but she won, I think.
True.
Yeah, that's true. It's cool. So this is what they were, I think essentially they were doing at the start of Bride of Frankenstein, was sort of playing into that whole thing where a group of friends just used to get around and tell stories to each other and stuff, which is cool. Okay, so this isn't the first adaptation of the book. A 16-minute short film. It was a loose adaptation put together by Thomas Edison at some point, didn't say, back in the day.
I know this wasn't the first version. I know there was something else. Back in the day, not even give me a date.
It didn't say.
You're JK. Yes, true.
It's quite a long time ago, though. Yeah, yeah. So Thomas Edison made a short film. As part of Edison Productions, he used to make films that weren't very good. Maybe they were at the time. I'm sure they were.
Seen
them
all, have you?
No, I haven't. I saw a bit of this one, and I was like, okay. So Frankenstein opened in New York City at the Mayfair Theatre, December 4th, 1931, and grossed $53 in 1 week. Big bucks.
True.
It was $53,000 in 1 week.
But, what did you say?
$53.
Oh. Oh no!
And then you quite dryly said, late? "True." Yeah, it's
getting late. I didn't quite know what was going on. Sorry.
True. Just saying true or false. Yeah.
True.
50% anyway. Okay, so dude. It's getting late in the day. My mind's a bit frazzled. You seem fine actually. we need to grade these films.
Yeah. Grade.
So would you give this the same grade or would you?
No, I don't think I would. I think I would go with either of them, I wasn't a huge fan. Like, I know for a fact I'll probably never want to watch either of them again.
Okay.
But that's not me being mean. You're having a little yawn there. It's not me being mean.
Come on,
it's bedtime now. Now it's dinner time. Now it's toilet time. Now it's dead time.
Bath and fire bed. Time. Come on.
Bath and bed. Let me wash your scrotum. But obviously, I can understand again how iconic this film is, and how iconic the characters are, and how even though it's a film from 1931, it still stands up and still had me interested and engrossed, albeit a little bit annoyed by certain elements. So I'd probably go for like a C for Frankenstein.
Yeah,
I think C for me is like my enjoyed it, didn't love it sort of score.
Yeah,
not a massive fan, but I bloody tolerated it. And Bride, I'd probably go for a D.
Okay. You didn't tolerate it.
No, I just don't think for me it felt like it didn't elaborate. I know obviously Frankenstein's monster changed. Didn't elaborate enough on the story. It felt a little bit like cobbled together and I didn't really understand. Only the stuff with the little blind man, I guess, really felt different. I don't know why I keep calling him a little blind man. Was he little? In my head, he was really small.
I think he was small compared to Frankenstein as a monster.
Because Frankenstein's a bloody great hulking beast, isn't he? Yeah. Okay, that's it.
So I'm going to give Frankenstein, the first one, a B+. I think, although like it's quite slow paced, like today's standards, I still thought it really good. And I think the reason I quite enjoyed that one is because, like I said, I've never really understood the appeal of Frankenstein until watching this one. And now I finally sort of clicked and like, oh, that's what it is. That's what it's all about. So yeah, I'll give that a B+. I'll give Bride of Frankenstein a C-, I think. Just because it felt like the same film, but like,
yeah,
not quite as focused to me. Okay, so what's the next film we are doing?
I think we are.
Oh, so we're either doing. We're going to do an honourable mention or like a new release next week, right?
Yeah, because I think the next on the list is Dracula from 1931.
Yeah.
And we did a Dracula episode not too long ago, so I think maybe if we do something different for next week.
Something after Ben's cliff.
Something after my cliff. Well, no, just to keep, I guess just to keep this podcast fresh and interesting and, you know, keep people on their toes. What's next on the list? Oh, no, what's this coming out?
Yeah. Is one coming out this week?
Here's what's coming out. Yeah, so we're going to choose one. I think if we do one of these, we might, if the one we don't do, we'll do again in the future, possibly.
Yeah, sounds good. So it basically depends on whether, if I get a chance to go see this film before Sunday and we're in record next, which is Alien Covenant, which you are a fan of, I think. And some reviewers out there aren't digging, so it'll be interesting. And if we don't do that, we'll be doing Get Out. So it'll be one of those two.
Get Out
was pretty great. So either, or I'm excited to do that. Okay, so this show is brought to you by the Story Studio, Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovach Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. Also, go to Facebook and search for Horror Hangout. And there'll be like a little group of people there, like a private group. We talk about horror films and stuff. It's quite cool. And thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a real horror dude. Thanks for pulling a double, because we missed last week because we're busy dudes. And we did a double today. And I think I'm feeling it. I don't know about
you. We did a double ender. And I'm feeling it.
What about the podcast? Are you feeling that as well? Or just a...
Yeah, but not as much.
Okay. Just the pipe. Okay. I'll start the clip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.